Ladies and gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report, coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. I'm Doug Hagman with my son, Joe Hagman, something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Have a lot of information coming fast and furious. We should remember always to use that phrase, fast and furious, to keep all of us, just to remind all of us that, government plans behind the scenes. Just thinking about Michael Hastings today. Period. Just leave it at that. Thinking about Benghazi today. Again, another period. Whatever happened to those issues? Yeah, gone. Want to carry over and just kind of sum up one thing, and then I'm going to toss it to Joe because there's just so much to get into. But, you know, it's interesting. The landscape of today is interesting. And I say this because early today, well, not early according to my body clock, but 8 o'clock this morning, Eastern Time, The Hill published an article about Sean Hannity. And you might think, oh, this is just, you know, my goodness, when are you going to shut up about this? About that claim of sexual harassment. You know, admittedly, I'm close to the situation. I know Pat Campbell from KFAQ out of Tulsa, where the woman who accused Sean Hannity of sexual harassment appeared. And I knew about it contemporaneous with her broadcast. And I knew this was going to be an issue. But see, here's why this is important. And it doesn't matter what you think of Sean Hannity. If you like him or don't like him. It's not the personality. It's what is involved. Sean Hannity, his monologue last night said it all. As a matter of fact, I almost think that he took a page out of one of my monologues.
Yeah, it was funny. Yesterday, listening to his show on the ride to the studio, I could have swore he did take a page right out of your playbook, because what he said and the way he phrased it is something that you say quite often.
Yes, and it's the individual involved in making the accusation. Let me just point out, I would classify, in my personal opinion, as an intellectual hobbit. At the very most. It's not about that individual. It's not about Sean Hannity. It's not about anything like that. Everyone's missing the bigger picture, which Sean Hannity explained last night. And he also explained was published in The Hill today, referencing his monologue from Monday. Here's what he had to say. I have to start by addressing a well-orchestrated effort by the intolerant left in this country that is designed to silence every conservative voice and by any means necessary. He continues. Again, I'm quoting Sean Hannity. Now, I am speaking out tonight so that you, our audience, will understand what is really happening and what is at stake when it comes to freedom of speech in this country. There's the ticket. I'm going to continue. Sean Hannity has said that there's always been efforts during his time at Fox News to smear, and I'm quoting this now, to smear and slander and besmirch, end quote him. But those efforts have not been as intense and completely insane as they are now. And I quote, it has only gotten worse in the age of President Trump, end quote. Again, picking up the quote. Now, it's no secret I have been a supporter of the president and, of course, his policies. And quite simply, these liberal fascists, they can't stand conservative voices, end quote. Continuing on with what he said. He also said that he had thick skin and he's used to being attacked. But he added this, he can no longer remain silent. And, quote, let the left slander against me slide, end quote. New paragraph. So, from now on, I want you to be informed of what I am doing and why I am doing it, end quote. Continuing. Again, I quote, if there's any person or group or organization, any media outlet that slanders, lies about me, besmirch as me and my character, I'm going to be calling them out, end quote. Writes The Hill. His comments come one day. It's a typo there. It's not the... I'll digress a moment. Have you noticed the editorial control, the editorial supervision of these websites is just... wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, his quotes come one day after conservative commentator, I'm not even going to mention her name, intellectual hobbit, said the Fox News host once invited her back to his hotel room after an event at a Detroit bookstore. I know that situation. I'll just leave it at that. And don't forget, okay, I don't know, for better or worse, I do have contacts at Fox News. I do know people who are in direct contact with Sean Hannity. While he may not even know me, and he knows of me, but he doesn't know me. Certainly he doesn't know what I know, nor would he care. But again, I say this as someone with access to individuals who have the, first-hand information. Hannity mentioned the accusations during his monologue. He said his breaking point happened this past weekend when the intellectual hobbit, those are my words, not his, whom Hannity claims has for more than a decade made, quote, the most outrageous, unfair, untrue allegations against him, made, quote, ridiculous and completely untrue claims, end quote. Let me tell you something. Okay, this intellectual hobbit, in my personal opinion, has made accusations against me, against Mark Levin, against Michael Savage, against insert conservative here, name of a conservative here. And, it's just in my personal opinion, it's just a nasty, crude, self-loathing individual. Writes Hannity. Now, in this fiercely divided and vindictive climate, I will no longer allow slander to go unchallenged as I see this, and this is important, as I see this to be a coordinated effort afoot to silence those with conservative views. What have I been saying? I will fight every single lie about me and all about any and all legal means available to me as an American. Now, in his monologue, and I was going to play this, but I figured I could just tell you as much. Remember, I had said, there are people out there who record, who write, transcribe every word that we say, that I say, that Joe says that we say on air. They publish, some publish it. Remember me saying that? Folks, Sean Hannity said that. Very same thing.
Yeah, almost word for word.
Yep.
He said it on his radio show yesterday. And, you know, he's exactly right. This is what we're seeing. And you know, I'll reread what you just wrote. Now, I'm not the only one of these that liberal fascists routinely target. Like me, conservatives are monitored on radio and TV every word they say.
Okay. And it's not... See, here's the thing. This is not about some obscure blogger in their, you know,
right.
Wearing holy sweatpants.
Right.
And I'm not talking about the sacred kind, you know, with stains on the pants or adult diapers, at least in one case that I'm pretty sure happens. You know.
No, this is a coordinated attack that goes beyond, the left or right.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, and we see what's going on with the censorship issues and the demonetization on YouTube.
This all is advertisements the big story.
Are yes. demonetized. Bill O'Reilly, all these accusers coming out of the woodwork. Kind of like when Trump was running for, president. You remember how all these people out of, you know, people who worked with him 10, 20 years ago, people who still worked with him came out and said, oh yeah, he sexually harassed me, he assaulted me. And in Bill O'Reilly's case, it seems that he did have some issues at Fox News, but the timing was interesting. You have Alex Jones being, he's being gone after by a yogurt company.
Chobani
Yogurt yep. Company and many others. Now Sean Hannity is being accused of sexual harassment.
And this is one thing
and the
too.
Attack from advertisers.
Yes, yes.
It's a coordinated attack yeah. on many levels from, you know, corporations,
yep.
To people being paid, to infiltrate, to troll online, to write falsehoods and whatnot. And it's out of hand. It's crazy. I mean, how do you combat
this, Joe and ladies and gentlemen? I just want to say this, okay? You've got no idea how big this is, and Joe does. Joe knows. You've got no idea how big this is, and how finally, I did send a note saying, "Welcome to the party." You know, glad you could join us, Sean, because it's. This is not a really at issue here is not about sexual harassment. It's not about sexual harassment. It really is not. It's not about, everything they say it's about. It's not about that. It's about silencing the opposition
mm-hmm.
by any means necessary. Here's a little bit of an aside here, a parallel course. If you are a Christian, and by default, chances are you are politically and morally conservative if you are a Christian broadcaster. Unapologetic Christian broadcaster. Or writer. I guarantee you that everything, that all of the attacks are going to be increased by orders of magnitude higher, greater than if you were just merely politically conservative. Now, I know that some of our detractors are going to say, oh, we just quit your whining. It's not about us. It really is not about us. It's not about Joe. It's not about me. It's not about Alex Jones. It's not about us. It's about the message that we are trying to get out there. It's about our platform. It's about our method of operation. Folks, right now, we can almost mark the day this happened. The course has changed. The people who are involved in this are doubling down. And there was something I cannot tell you exactly. I can't give you the specifics on this. But when I was reading a legal document, that should tell you something. And I read a sentence. This person, One sentence in this document that was well over 100 pages. One sentence. And in fact, to be frank, it was a sentence fragment.
How does that work?
It was an improper sentence. How's that?
Yeah.
Said it all. And I can tell you that, you know what, I cannot tell you directly what it said, but I can tell you what it was in reference to. Trafficking. Child trafficking. And the political parties, child trafficking. It didn't fit in the, it just didn't fit. But it didn't say child trafficking, okay, but that's what it referenced. It didn't fit. How am I losing you? Joe said you're losing me. Am I losing you? Seriously. Okay. Ask me a question.
I didn't know the point you were getting at with the 100 pages and the traffic.
Okay. There are certain topics that networks won't touch.
Right.
That independent broadcasters, if they do touch it, it's the third rail. They're struck. Okay. They're struck with copyright violations. They're struck with not advertiser friendly. Or if they get too deep, bad things happen.
Okay.
Now, go back to Breitbart, Andrew Breitbart. Think about Andrew Breitbart. Think about that tweet that he sent a few months before his untimely death. Y'all know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not going to mention any more about that. But except to say,
you don't want to talk about the content of the tweet?
Well, the content was about
how John Podesta is household name for protection of child trafficking is beyond me, something along those lines.
Right. But there is a common, not just a common issue, but a common figure, person, among Breitbart, Michael Hastings, and others. In that one fragmented sentence in that abysmally vomit-like document that I was reading really told me all I needed to know. And that's when the fake news label came out. That's when opposition research began to go into overdrive. Opposition research firms. I said all of that to circle back around and to just to let everyone know, Saul Alinsky, the spirit of Saul Alinsky, is alive and well within the people who are attempting to silence all of us. And by any means necessary, I guarantee you they mean by any means necessary. These are not good people. And by the way, the very, and I say this with a heavy heart, but nonetheless looking right in your eyes, it's the so-called self-professed, self-anointed Christians. Many of them. Who are eyeball deep in this. Who will be quick to say, you know what? That's not you, oh my goodness, you're leading people astray, or you're all about money, or you're all about, it's all fake, or you're peddling fear porn, or you're quit your wanting, or whatever it might be. Whatever it might be, it is at the epicenter of this one group, especially if you are a Christian and conservative blogger. It is an element of the Christians or at least those people who call themselves Christians, who are at the epicenter, who are propelling this. And it's sad because, and many people are falling for this. So Sean Hannity had spoken a lot, and I think when you read the article on The Hill, and I'm going to be coming out with a report on this because this is too important. The magnitude is so large. The issue is so deep. The people involved, even, okay, so the Christian angle was not addressed. The conservative angle was. I tell you this, the conservatives, of course, most conservatives tend to be, or let me rephrase that, most seekers of the truth tend to be conservatives, at least morally, politically, mostly politically conservative. They don't adhere to the Alinsky or even the broader communist slash RevCom by any means necessary type groups. So automatically they're on, they got huge bullseyes. We all have huge bullseyes on our backs. But again, you add that Christian element, then you've got the Christians, the self-proclaimed Christians who say, well, you know what? They're going to come after you. And I'm saying this, you, the listener, as well, saying, well, you're a false Christian or whatever. You're using a platform of a Christian platform in order to sell fear and all this, which is just bogus. But this is the way.
What do you mean? We don't sell fear?
No.
We don't have it by the bottle?
No. Yeah. but see, here's the thing. They will use the existing laws. And this is something we have to really understand. They will use the existing laws and make new judicial opinions in order to silence us. That's coming. That's next.
Look at Europe.
That's next.
Look at Europe. The hate speech laws. I read the statute yesterday, I believe it was, or Sunday, on what constitutes hate speech in Europe. I'd be afraid to have a conversation with anybody.
Yeah, if this program being heard in Europe, it's probably not going to be heard in Europe, at least not on any... you're going to have to kind of get this via podcast or, you know, some... Yeah, it's... Our days in Europe, at least on the open market, are getting few. And that's Canada, too.
We only got a few minutes away from the break. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is going to be joining us after the break, and we are definitely going to be talking more about this attack on the on conservatives, on the alternative media, whether it's from, you know, slanderers or false people who make false accusations or from sponsors. This is definitely, you know, right at the top of our list of things that we need to not only focus on, but identify and then learn how to correct it. But some interesting news I wanted to touch on here. Many people have been paying attention to what has been going on in Berkeley. Ann Coulter was supposed to be giving a speech there on the 27th, which was then canceled by Berkeley over security issues. Well, she's going there to speak. UC Berkeley, yes, readies police as Ann Coulter plans to speak in public plaza on campus. Now, the university is bracing for massive protests on Thursday because this is something that Ann Coulter, as I said, was invited to speak there. The university, over security concerns, or so they say, canceled it. Ann Coulter said, well, I'm going to go anyway. And now she's not speaking indoors. She's going to be outdoors. And there are concerns.
Open air target.
Yes, there's concerns of violence. Well, there's been an interesting development. Late last week, we reported on HagmanReport.com that the mayor of Berkeley, was a member of Antifa.
Yes.
Well, there's an article on Fox News, UC Berkeley riots, violence looms as mayor questioned over his ties to extremist groups. And it goes on to say how Berkeley is once again to be the site of brutal protests on Thursday as questions arise about whether the city's mayor has ties to an extremist group sparking violence. And the thing goes through if Ann Coulter's going to be there. But what's interesting is law enforcement sources say, regardless of whether Ann Coulter shows up, there's 99% chance that the college will erupt in violence. Either way.
And that's self-inflicted, that's orchestrated, we all know that's planned, and that's their intent. Is violence is high on their agenda.
Now, the sheriff of Berkeley, the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, has been meeting with the local police in Berkeley due to what the sheriff says was a lackluster response by local police in dealing with violence in the past there. Basically, they said that, you know, the police are saying that their hands were tied. And then they go on to add that in the past, protesters felt the police did not protect them. At the last riot, many are pledging to defend themselves. People are becoming vigilantes. Well, I find that's label is a terrible label.
Yep.
You're not a vigilante if you're defending yourself. But anyway, the point of this is two things. Is that the police there say that... that they've been basically told to stand down, more or less, not in those words. But the mayor, there's a rift between the Berkeley Police Department and the city government led by Jesse Arguin, the 32-year-old newly elected mayor. Arguin is the has been supporting left-wing violence, and he's also a member on Facebook of a group called By Any Means Necessary, which is it's an anarchist group that is promoting and inciting these violent protests, not only in Berkeley, but around the country. And they are claiming to come out and do it again. But we'll talk more about this when we have some open time. When we come back, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry will be our guest, and it's going to be a great show. And then Stan Dale will be with us in hour number three. Also, there's an interesting story about a judge striking down Donald Trump's sanctuary city defunding executive order. We're going to talk about that and more when we come back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
These uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Thank you.
folks, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. I want to remind people, a week from this coming Friday, Gurnee, Illinois, Chicago, just north of Chicago, Joe Nye and Russ Dizdar, John Robertson will be there. Awaken to the Shaken. That's right. Awaken to the Shaken conference. We're going to be there in person. I've got a couple of presentations planned. Joe does as well. John does. Russ Dizdar, of course. And it's going to be a fantastic event, conference, if you will. We're reaching capacity, and it's my understanding we're reaching seating capacity. The registration to attend is free. All you have to do is go to paulbegleyprophecy.com and find the link to Awaken to the Shaken and register. I would do that sooner rather than later. It's important, and we're going to be talking a lot about current events. I'm just going to, well, a couple of events, of course, is going to be in the human trafficking aspect of things and the findings as they relate to entities, groups, individuals, landscape over the last several months based on citizens' research and journalism, journalists who have outed many of the people and subjects with respect to the subject, as well as the threat from within by the Islamic element, and how the mosques in this country are acting as points of sedition, in my view, anyway, as kind of a Trojan horse. So it's going to be an information-packed weekend. Of course, Russ always pleases. Now, having said that, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is our guest. Eric, is he? We ready to go? Beautiful. And folks, you might remember Dr. Pry from some time ago here on this program. I don't have the exact date in front of me. As usual, I left that note elsewhere.
February.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something. I could listen to Dr. Peter Vincent Pry probably not just hours, but days.
FamilySecurityMatters.org is the website. FamilySecurityMatters.org. And
he's a contributing editor for that, the executive director of the Task Force on National Homeland Security, and director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Go ahead.
Dr. Pry, welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Man, I'll tell you what, Dr. Pry, if there was ever a time, in a moment in history, if there was ever when your expertise would be necessary to provide an analysis of what's taking place. The program description for tonight, of course, is the asymmetrical warfare. That's asymmetric art of war. Where do you want to start? Because there's just so much going on. I mean, you could start anywhere and be relevant, it seems like.
Yes, I've never seen, I've spent my whole life in the national security area. And when I began in the CIA at the height of the Cold War, and then saw the collapse of the Soviet Union, the rise of Russia, the rise of new threats, I've never seen a national security environment more unstable and more dangerous than the one we face today. And as we speak tomorrow, you know, the unprecedented act of the White House calling in the entire U.S. Senate, all 100 senators, to the White House, you know, for a briefing on North Korea. You know, we're approaching or past the 100th day. It's actually been an ongoing, protracted nuclear crisis with North Korea ever since their third illegal nuclear test back in 2013. And the press has described us in the 100th day of a crisis with North Korea. It's actually been a crisis that's gone on now since 2013. With North Korean dictator regularly threatening to make nuclear missile strikes on the United States. And North Korea isn't the only one.
Well, Dr. Pry, while you're on the subject of North Korea, one of the questions I really want to ask you, who sold this out? Who sold the technology? Who provided the technology to North Korea, in your view? How did they get to this point?
It's a fact. You can actually see it. The Russians and Chinese, the two
most of the longer range missiles that the North Koreans have, the so-called Musudan, which is their intermediate range ballistic missile, and their two road mobile ICBMs, the KN-08 and KN-14, are both based on Russia's SSN-6 SERB. It was a submarine launch ballistic missile that that with the help of Russians who are actually in North Korea and Chinese, there are Russians and Chinese scientists and engineers in North Korea helping them with their program. And they've souped up the SSN-6 so it can reach us. That's basically a Russian missile. The sub-launch ballistic missile program, the submarines, are derived from about a dozen Gulf-class Russian ballistic missile submarines that Russia sold to them some years ago to North Korea, supposedly for scrap. And we are so stupid and naive. I mean, the Obama administration let them get away with that as if that was really going to happen, like they were going to really use those submarines for scrap. It's entirely foreseeable what they were going to do. You know, they were going to start turning them into a ballistic missile submarine fleet. Those road mobile ICBMs I had told you about, they're riding on Russian, on Chinese transporter erector launchers. You know, the people describe them as trucks. They're a lot more sophisticated than that. A transporter erector launcher, so-called TEL, is a huge and sophisticated piece of equipment because it has to carry an intercontinental ballistic missile and then be able to elevate it to launch and stabilize the missile in such a way so that it'll still be accurate. All of that's very complicated to do. And, you know, the Chinese basically sold the TELs to North Korea. And we've recovered parts of North Korean missiles. This has been in the press. I mean, this is not classified, what I'm telling you. You know, when we found that the parts are technology that have been coming in from China, including from Western Europe, but purchased by Chinese and North Korean front companies operating in China and going to North Korea. And this is why, and I feel kind of like a voice in the wilderness here, because you know, for years I've been trying to tell people that there is no China card. You know, for 25 years, administration after administration, including now the current administration, you know, has chased this will-o'-the-wisp that if we can only convince China, you know, to lean on North Korea, that we can solve this problem. You know, but North Korea is a problem to us because China wants it to be. You know, China and Russia have both enabled North Korea to pose this threat to us for geostrategic reasons. This is asymmetric warfare at its highest level. And normally, when we think of asymmetric warfare, we think of technologies like cyber attack or EMP attack. But another form of asymmetric warfare is what's going on with North Korea, where you've got this great power chess game going on, and North Korea is the pawn. And it's being put out there to basically threaten the existing world order, which is based on U.S. military power and credibility and our willingness to be the global sheriff, as it were, and to confront us with this scary actor who is so unstable and so dangerous that they're hoping the United States will abandon its security commitments to our allies in Japan and South Korea and elsewhere, or that they will abandon us because they're afraid that we will not uphold our security guarantees to them. And that's what this game is all about. It's really, you know, North Korea is a cat's paw for Russia and China. And even if we are able to resolve the North Korean problem through negotiation, it's going to cost us. So Russia and China really can't lose, especially China. We will have to pay them something in order to resolve the North Korean problem peacefully.
Blackmail.
If they're willing to resolve it peacefully at all, they may not be. In fact, given the history, they won't be because they have much bigger. They're after a very high stakes. You know, instead of having a strategic partnership with the United States, I could imagine, for example, one way of offering this is, have you noticed how we're not complaining anymore about China's encroachment on the South China Sea, you know, which is one of the most important, it's perhaps the most important waterway in the world. Not only is it rich in oil resources and claimed by multiple countries, you know, but it's one of the greatest, if perhaps the greatest, transportation artery in the whole world, because the trade from Asia and the Middle East and Europe too, that passes through the Suez Canal, passes through the South China Sea and goes to North America and South America and to Japan and the Koreas, and China will basically own that. That's why we have been, you know, we were challenging China's encroachment and island building in the South China Sea. But, you know, we're sort of capable of only focusing on one crisis at a time. But right now, you know, we're not complaining at all about China's presence in the South China Sea. Is it possible that a deal will be struck where we surrender the South China Sea to China in exchange for them supposedly leaning on North Korea, or promises that they will lean on North Korea? And then, if history repeats itself here, what will happen is we will go into negotiations. Promises will be made about constraints on the North Korean nuclear program. Concessions will be made, including to China. China will put the concessions in its pocket, and nothing will happen with North Korea, and the North Korean threat will get even bigger. That's what I predict is going to happen, if we're lucky. I mean, if the benign outcome happens. You know, the bad outcome is a war with North Korea, possibly escalating into a world war.
Oh, okay. To hear you say this from your experience, and, of course, folks, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, former analyst for the CIA, served in the House Services Committee, credentials, just unbelievably great credentials, an analyst, understands the threat better than anyone, author of three books, Blackout Wars, Apocalypse Unknown being two right now, of course, available on Amazon. You understand this. So, okay, that's the best case scenario, or the most benign scenario that you see playing out. And that's not a cakewalk, obviously.
Well, miracles are possible. You know, it could be, and I hope I am wrong. I hope China really has had a change of heart, and that, because that is the narrative in the mainstream press, that the meeting, the cruise missile strikes in Syria, and the aircraft carrier group moving toward North Korea, you know, the possibility that Trump might actually make a preemptive strike in North Korea, that this has sobered the Chinese and brought them to their senses, and the press, some in the press, are even saying that China's moving 150,000 troops to the North Korean border, and Russia moving an army into Siberia, which has happened. This is being done to support us, you know, in case we decide to preempt North Korea. That they will either support us, or at least that they will stop the North Korean refugees flowing into their territories across the border.
Right.
You know, but the last time China mobilized an army and put it on the North Korean border, it was the Korean War. And
right.
It wasn't done to support us. It was done to support their ally, North Korea, and, you know, to throw us back from the Yalu River, because they considered it to be a vital national interest of theirs, that they support their client state, North Korea, that they could not tolerate a U.S. ally, South Korea, or U.S. Army being really right on their border. And I don't think China has changed its calculus of what its geostrategic and geopolitical interests are. You know, I think this is why intelligence is important, you know, understanding the real situation awareness.
Sure.
I hope we're not making decisions on the naive assumption that China and Russia are on our side against North Korea, and that they are going to support us if we preempt North Korea. And it's entirely possible, I think likely, you know, that their reaction will be just the opposite, that they aren't going to support us. You know, they might even go to war against us, Or they might just make sure that they might remain neutral and hope that North Korea throws a couple nukes around. Maybe takes out an American city, maybe takes out a Japanese city, maybe takes out a South Korean city. Because if that happens, that will be such a high price for all of our countries to pay, or just takes out one city in any of these countries, that I think it would shatter the Western alliance in the Pacific. You know, you know, I don't think, you know, that would be such a sobering experience. Americans are very, having come out of two lost Middle Eastern wars, we're sort of in another post-Vietnam syndrome period, where Americans are understandably sick and tired of sending their sons and daughters off to die in foreign wars for strange geostrategic reasons that are not entirely comprehensible, you know, or difficult to understand. Yeah. And there's, on both the left and the right, there is a great many who would like us to go into a posture of isolationism and, you know, and stop being the world policeman. And that's exactly what China and Russia want.
Well, Dr. Pry, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to get your take on this. Do you think that our leadership has squandered the goodwill, good nature, and willingness of the American people based on the foreign entanglements that we've seen over the last, I don't know, 25, 50 years?
I absolutely do. I think, look at, you know, I'm no fan of Obama, all right? You know, I think he was one of the worst presidents we ever had. And a rosy-colored hue has started to surround George W. Bush because Obama was such a bad president, you know? But the Bush administration was not a good presidency either in terms of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, when I supported those wars, and I did support them, you know, the purpose was to punish those countries, to punish the terrorist governments that were basically in charge of those countries, to give them a bloody nose, to hopefully kill their leadership, to take revenge for the 9/11 attacks, and to cripple their militaries, and then to get out. You know, we did the right thing for the first 6 months of both of those wars. The decision by the Department of State, when President Bush was persuaded by Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and the Washington Post and the New York Times to stay and reconstruct those countries and try to build them into democracies, that turned them into two Vietnams. We snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory. You know, had the United States done what it had originally intended to do, you know, and just gone in there, given them a bloody nose, taken out the leadership, crippled their militaries, and then gotten out, you know, the whole geostrategic future would have been very different. You know, America's credibility would not be as diminished as it is now. The morale of the American people would not be diminished as it is now. The wars would not have been as costly to us in treasure and lives as they have turned out to be. We took almost no casualties in the first 6 months. All the casualties came later when we were trying to reconstruct and pursue the neocon dream, you know, of spreading democracy in the Middle East, you know, which was a quixotic enterprise. You know, there was never any history of democracy in any of those countries. They are in the Middle Ages. They never went through the Enlightenment and the history that the West had to. It took centuries, you know, for the Western democracies to become Western democracies. And none of those Middle Eastern countries have gone through that history. You know, there was no realistic prospect of turning them into functioning democracies. So it was a futile effort that was fated to lose. And just like in Vietnam, you know, we ended up fighting against guerrilla forces who would hide among the population or cross a border and hide in Pakistan. And for various reasons, You know, they had these protected zones, and so it became, you know, inevitable that there wasn't there were unwinnable wars. You know, we decided to, and it was the president's decision to put us into that situation. You know, we had won the wars, and then threw that victory away by making this foolish decision. You know, to try to bring democracy to Afghanistan and Iraq. And it turned them into unwinnable wars. So I supported what the original goals of the wars had been, but not the decision to stay there. And and the president was warned that he was going to destroy his presidency. And not only did he destroy his presidency, but you know, we lost both houses of Congress, and that's why Obama got elected. You know, because it wrecked the economy. You know, well, the wars alone didn't wreck the economy. There were other bad decisions. But the disasters in the foreign policy combined with the bad economy ended up delivering the country into the hands of Obama and the Democratic Party for 8 years. And, you know, it's been, we've gone even further downhill under for the past 8 years. So not now, you know, we stand at a threshold where this, I mean, to really comprehend it, you know, there was a book written at the end of the Cold War, you know, in 1991 by Francis Fukuyama called The End of History.
Yep.
And many people believed, it looked at that time like the end of history was true, that the long twilight struggle, you know, between democracy and totalitarianism had finally been won by the United States. You know, that here we stood, the apex of power, having defeated the Soviet Union without firing a shot. Amazing. It was miraculous. And not only that, but we seem to have won the ideological contest, too. And Fukuyama predicted, and most people believed, you know, that the future belonged to freedom, to free political institutions, to free economic systems, and people were going to follow the model of the United States and wanted to implement that model. That's where we stood in 1991. And there was, and Fukuyama called it the end of history because throughout history, up until that point, the history of man had been this struggle between authoritarian and totalitarian systems versus free systems, democracies. With democracies usually not winning in the long struggle, okay? But we had won. And Fukuyama was declaring the long contest over. Now look where we are. Freedom is on retreat everywhere. You know, the United States is economically and militarily hollow at this point, and we face threats to our existence, not just from one actor like the Soviet Union, but from multiple actors, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, global terrorism. You know, five actors who I believe are actually acting in concert. You know, they have a tacit alliance. The enemy of my enemy being my friend. My friend. They have different ideologies, but all of them are totalitarian or authoritarian states united against the leader of freedom, the United States. And we're facing this right now. I mean, tomorrow, this is going to be an interesting meeting in the White House, but this is one of the decisive battles, and it could, this conflict, this or confrontation, it's not a conflict yet, but this confrontation with North Korea, you know, this is a gambit that Russia and China have set up, a trap they have set up for years, bringing North Korea to this point, you know, where it could pose an existential threat to the United States and its allies, you know, and now we have woken up to the point where we realize we've got to do something about it, you know, that logically we shouldn't have to live with this situation. We can't live with this situation. I'm afraid that our elites may convince themselves that we can get along and live with this situation, even the North Korea armed with nuclear weapons. Because the great hubris of the Western democracies has always been our irrational and limitless faith and the ability to negotiate peace with anyone and over anything.
Mm.
And I call that hubris, you know, because it's not true. You know, there are times when you have to fight. We should have listened, learned that lesson, and the great generation did learn that lesson. You know, the great generation learned that lesson from World War II.
Sure.
You know, when you look at the Western democracies, we even convinced ourselves that Adolf Hitler, Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and imperial Japan were open to reason, and that we could negotiate peace with them, even after Hitler took the Rhineland and Austria and Czechoslovakia. There was still a belief that war could be avoided and we could negotiate a peace with them. And it was almost too late. We
Dr.
waited
Pye,
almost too late.
We're up against the top of the hour network break. We got about 3 minutes for the break. So when we come back after the 3 minute break, we're going to continue where we left off. In the meantime, folks, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. I want you to go to Family Security Matters, folks, familysecuritymatters.org. Two articles written, co-authored by our guest tonight with Ambassador James Woolsey, the North Korean war scare, as well as how North Korea could kill 90% of Americans.
Yeah, and I believe that one's with the EMP threat. Yeah, again, our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He's going to be with us through the next hour. familysecuritymatters.org is the website. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the GMAG Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bing, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super GMAG Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.